Well, good morning, all of you out there in K-Goat land. This is Lori Beckel, still missing Mark Cuccinella, who will be back from Italy one of these weeks, welcoming you to our What's Upstream program this morning. Today is March 4th, and our show today really will be talking about the beginning of the election cycle here in Colorado and in Clear Creek County with my guests Jody Hartman Ball and Chris Gould. We will get to them in just a minute, but we'll be talking about how elections take place in Colorado here at the beginning of the cycle. And then in the second part of the show, we'll be talking about public service. And my two friends here in the studio with me are both incredible public servants. So that'll be a fun part of the conversation. So you are listening to KYGT LPFM 102.7 and 109.3 on the FM dial and streaming worldwide at clearcreekradio.com. A couple of PSAs before we kick off our show. This month, K-Goat marks its 31st year. Please consider making a contribution to help us stay on the air. Click on the Donate Now button at the top of our website, clearcreekradio.com. You can make a one-time gift or set up a regular payment of any amount. We really encourage that because then it just happens automatically. You don't forget about it, and we can count on it. Clear Creek Radio, Inc. is an exempt 501c3 charitable organization, and your gift will be tax deductible. Keep listening and help us keep community radio alive and well in Clear Creek County. Thank you. And then a second PSA related to the show today is that the Clear Creek Democrats are holding our election year caucus and assembly on March 7th from 10 to 3:30 or 4 in the afternoon at the new Carlson Elementary School. Come and meet the Democratic candidates. Registered Democrats will vote for preferences. Congressman Joe Neguse will be our guest. And for more information and registration, please go to our website, Clear Creek Colorado Democratic Party.org. So let's us begin by welcoming Jody, Commissioner Jody Hartman Ball, one of our wonderful Clear Creek County Commissioners. Hi, Jody.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you for having me, Lori.
Sure. And Chris Gould is here. Welcome, Chris.
Thanks for having me.
Sure. So while both Jody and Chris are involved with the Clear Creek Democratic Party, as am I, our show today really is not going to be focused on politics, except how politics plays into our choices during elections and during voting. But we're really going to be talking a little bit more generally just about candidates, why you become a candidate, public service, and then more about just how in Colorado our election season begins. My understanding is that the Republican Party in Clear Creek County had their caucus, I believe, last night. So they follow kind of the same procedures. There are election laws that govern all of the ways we do things. And then, as I said in my PSA, the Democrats are caucusing on Saturday. But caucus, basically, I looked up the definition of caucus. And it's interesting to note that not all states in the United States do caucusing. Some states just run primaries. But in Colorado, beginning in the 1930s, I think, we started doing caucusing. And it's just a meeting in which local members of a political party register their preferences among candidates running for office or select delegates to attend a convention. So it really is the most grassroots way we begin organizing for an election. We meet by political party, and we meet by the very smallest unit of how people are organized by political parties in their communities, and that is called a precinct. In Clear Creek County, we have 9 precincts, beginning way up at Bakerville as Precinct 1, all the way down through the county and going all the way over to, I think it's Little Bear, in which is Precinct 9. So we have 9 precincts here in Clear Creek County. And both the Republicans and the Democrats meet in caucus and begin by dividing people up in precincts. So this is a very, very grassroots way of engaging our voters in the whole political process, and it is beginning this week in Colorado. Interestingly, I heard that the Democrats last night in Denver had 2,000 people who participated in the Denver caucus, so we're not going to have that many this week, this Saturday. But, you know, it's exciting because we will be nominating Chris as our county commissioner candidate. And Jody will remember that she was nominated 2 years ago to be a candidate for county commissioner. And we nominated you at the caucus 2 years ago. What do you remember about that, Jody?
Oh, I remember that day very vividly. Alora nominated me. The probably biggest thing I was worried about is my speech, but I think you have like 1 minute to do a speech, and that's not enough time to thank people, but it's an exciting time, and it's also kind of like a hump that you get over. That's one more step to get closer to where you need to be, and then you just look forward to the next steps, which is getting out and talking to the people. So that was an exciting part.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, Chris, I don't know about just your thoughts about kind of you're in now the position Jody was in 2 years ago coming up to your nomination. So we are nominating, as did the Republicans, their candidates, our candidates for our county local offices. And I'm just wondering what you're thinking about that.
You know, as you talk about caucus versus primary, mm-hmm. one of the things that I think is a positive these days, especially in the aftermath of COVID, and given all of our digital connection, is that caucus and assembly in the local level is a face-to-face. It's an engagement with your community mm-hmm. around the issues that are, you know, that everybody's dealing with, and it's a chance to look each other in the eye and say, here's what we think is important, and this is the candidate that we go for. And thinking about that versus a primary, I can see where a primary, especially the way that we have it set up now in Colorado with mail-in voting, that does encourage everybody to engage. It's very easy to engage, and it's harder to set aside the time on a Tuesday night or a Saturday morning or whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. But I still find it very much a community centric or community focused gathering. Mm-hmm. That and I find that really, right now, really important given the times.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, we really tried hard to engage a person to share in this show who was involved with the Republican caucuses, and we had some trouble finding somebody who would be willing to come on the show. So I don't want you all to think that we planned it this way. We really did want to have kind of a bipartisan conversation about it, but we're grateful that we can still have this conversation. So caucusing and the opportunity to meet your neighbors in the smallest group in your precinct, the smallest group possible, is to share ideas, to elect people who will become part of the business organization of the party, which we call precinct organizers. That happens. We have some conversations about what is important to us. It's the time when we are also asking people to get involved in helping to run elections. Here in Clear Creek County, we're looking for election judges and poll watchers. And while the county clerk really determines who those people are going to be, and Brenda Corbett has done a fabulous job here in Clear Creek County, and we are so grateful that we've just not had any election hysterics here in this county, and thanks to Brenda for doing that. And I think I invited her to come on the show, I'll just mention, and she has just got her hands full right now, so she was unable to come on the show. But we're also asking our neighbors if they want to become part of the machine here. And the way that happens is that election judges become part of the county clerk's bench. They always have a Republican and a Democrat, registered Republican, registered Democrat, working side by side in all of the jobs she has, whether it's checking people in to vote, whether it's picking up ballots in the mail drop-off ballot box. But there's always a bipartisan team working together to assist our county clerk, who just can't be everywhere all the time. So that's her bench, and we're trying to find people to help out with elections also at caucus. I'm just wondering, do you either of you have a memory of participating as a younger person in caucuses and before you got this involved? Do you remember participating in a caucus?
I definitely remember being involved in caucuses when I was younger. I was speaking earlier that I kind of felt like we were in the 1800s, the way we all got together. And there's been different kinds of ways that they've conducted caucuses here in the county. When I was in Idaho Springs, we all met at St. Paul's Parish, I believe, and it was a packed room. A lot of people used to come out, and then, you know, you talk your neighbors into why you are preferring a certain candidate, and then everybody kind of comes to the consensus of who they're going to support. And then I've also been to other caucuses where they've been separated. So I believe I was up in Georgetown for one, because at the time I lived in Dumont, and that was a different experience for me too. I met a lot of people that I didn't even know lived in the neighborhood, and we had some good conversations there as well. So very positive experiences here in Clear Creek for caucuses, all the way from probably when I registered to vote when I was 19 to now.
Mm-hmm. I have zero experience with caucus. Very early as an educator, I made a decision to stay unaffiliated. because for me, it felt like that was, you know, how I could best serve my students. And that especially was true as an administrator. And so it's only been recently that I have declared myself as a Democrat. And so but it's funny, you know, thinking back over the years, I'll be honest, caucus always, even though it shouldn't have been, it always felt like kind of a mysterious thing. You know, you kind of think about some of the caricatures that you get through movies or whatever about the smoke-filled rooms in Chicago or whatever, the politics in the back room sort of thing. But so I personally am excited to experience a caucus and see what it really feels like.
Yeah, well, terrific. Yeah, it's funny, Chris, that you would mention that, because I was reading up on some of the history of caucuses and assemblies in Colorado, and that image of a sort of smoke-filled backroom dealings came up in that. And funny enough, I have some secondhand but personal knowledge of that when my dad was running for the state Senate. And shenanigans were pulled off at this was Arapahoe County caucus, that took him completely by surprise. So, and this was in 1968, I think. So even up till then, there were sort of backroom deals being made and, you know, people kind of deciding at the last minute to run and gathering their friends to vote for him up until then. And then there have been a slew of election laws in Colorado that really require transparency, and that kind, we're trying to dispel that kind of way things used to operate. And so hopefully your experience on Saturday will be that things are completely transparent. Everything is known ahead of time. All of the delegates that register to come to caucus in our county also may move on to the county assembly, which will be in the afternoon. So we want to hear from everyone when we move from our caucus to our assembly, which is all the registered delegates will be meeting in a room together. And that's when we will nominate first of all, we will approve the business that we will do. So everyone will be very clear what the rules are, how the votes will take place, all of those kind of things. We will nominate our candidates for our county offices. We will do a preference poll, and the rules require us to do a preference poll of all of our delegates. So we're hoping to fill this room with people who are very interested in, again, voicing who they're supporting, and it's for the highest office that we are electing in Colorado. And that office is the U.S. Senate office. So it's the election for Democrats that includes Karen Breslin and Julie Gonzalez and John Hickenlooper. Those are the three candidates who are running as Democrats and have all registered to come to our assembly and ask our assembly, our delegates at our assembly, who their preference is. So we'll be doing that preference poll. And then from the breakdown of that preference poll, we elect the designated number of delegates we get to move on to the state assembly. And this process is exactly the same in the Republican Party, because it's governed by state statute and the rules that are agreed on by both parties. So basically, that's kind of what will happen, and everything should be known. It shouldn't be a surprise. It shouldn't be back dealings. So I'm wondering, hearing all of that, Chris, do you feel any better?
Yeah, I guess I wasn't too worried about all cigar smoke happening. But one thing that your explanation of the process just made me think of. I was listening to somebody speak about. Well, let me back up and say, it's so easy to focus on our presidential elections, mm-hmm. right? Because I think you have a limited number of people that you need to kind of keep track of, and especially as you get close to an election. But I was listening to somebody talk about the fact that Article 1 of the Constitution is the legislative body, and this person's take on it was that it's the first article of our Constitution for a reason, because the legislative body is the the embodiment of the Republican idea, the republic, mm-hmm. right? The Democratic Republic, and so
because it's for the people.
It's for the people, right?
The closest thing to the people,
right? As you think about, Senate is 6 years, but House of Representatives is every 2 years
right.
that they're up, and so as you say, close to the people. And so as you are talking about, kind of how the delegates kind of line up based on their preference for a Senate candidate, what it does for me is makes me think I need to pay more attention than I ever have before to those legislators, those candidates for those legislative offices. And that could be at the federal level, but even at the state level, and really put some thought into those, because, it just made an impact to think that's Article 1. That was the first thing that the writers of the Constitution that's what they put in there as number one. So I just thought it was an interesting perspective going into our election cycle.
Yeah, it really does, because it draws a straight line from a person at our level voting, right, to a person who then is sent either to our state house or to Congress. And we get to, for instance, on Saturday, meet Joe Neguse and hear from him. And it's important to him to come and have conversation with his constituents. And so it's a direct line from us to them. I'm wondering what you're thinking, Jody.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, for me personally, I have felt that all of the elections were important, but I do hear the chitter chatter out there that, they only vote in the presidential year, or, the local stuff you'll see when it's just the mayor of Idaho Springs, not a lot of people turn out. And not a lot of candidates turn out. Like, the mayors a lot of times are uncontested. But I think in today's times, we've learned that this is your accountability too. Mm-hmm. So when we complain that the president or the governor or the mayor or the commissioners are not doing their jobs, these legislators are the ones that make sure that these are all held to be accountable. Mm-hmm. And so when you send your House of Representatives or your Senate, right now there's a lot of frustration, and I say, you got to get out there and you've got to vote, because those are the representations of every single person. When somebody comes and approaches me about something, and it, is going to affect maybe 100 people, and I say, I have 9,200 people standing behind me right now, because I represent every single one of them. Mm-hmm. And that's hard decisions that you have to make. But as a voter, I think it's really important to put the proper people in those places, so that everything else is ran smoothly.
Yeah. You said 9,200, and I think that is the number of registered voters in Clear Creek County, correct?
It's actually the residents.
Okay.
Because I represent, you know, the kids.
Yeah. So I just recently saw the number because I'm registering delegates, and there are 9,200 and some registered voters in this county. So it could be that with the way people get registered as you get your driver's license and that kind of thing, mm-hmm. that we might have almost everyone who lives here registered.
I think, too, cool. We have an aging community, so there's a lot of engagement as you get older. Probably you have more time, you're more educated, like where I'm at, that you know that it's important when you vote. That has been my big goal, is to make sure my kids vote. I'm on them. I've got one that still votes at our house, and all the others, I'm like, did you turn it in yet? And I'll harass them, and I'll get on and see, because you can see if people have turned in their ballots. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think when the kids talk about change and they talk about they don't like how things are going, and I say, do you always want 80-year-old, mostly white males voting for you and telling you how to be and what your future is? If you don't, get involved. And that means be a candidate, help support candidates, and most importantly, vote. Because if you don't vote, you know, things are going to maybe not go in your direction.
Yeah. I loved your point, too, Jody, about, you know, accountability. Because that is where people have to be accountable for their record during elections. And whether you like what's going on in Washington right now or you don't, I think we all could agree that we're not seeing the level of accountability that the Constitution asked for by having three equal branches of government. And that your point about, and Chris's point, about electing people to go to work at the federal level, no matter party, are going also for the purpose of doing the job they have sworn to take mm-hmm. when they take that office. And that is the checks and balances that we need for our government to work.
Right. I actually had heard something after I got elected. And there was a commissioner, I don't know where this was, I believe it was in Colorado, that when he got elected, he never showed back up. So he collected that check for those 4 years and never represented those people. And, you know, I think, like, what were those voters thinking? What did they think they were going to get? Because I bet you it's not what they thought they were going to get. And that's crazy to think, like, the statute for us, to, you know, the requirements really are so minimal, legislative wise. It's the people that hold them accountable.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Which brings up in my mind that it's not just about what happens on the election cycles, but it's what are you sending to your representative? You know, in between, when there's something that you're passionate about, are you making that your voice heard with those representatives? And I know, Jody, because, you know, I've heard you talk about this, about how you're on late night phone calls with people these days because they have a concern and they want to be heard and you're there to hear them, you know. So there are people that take that to heart locally. Mm-hmm. But I think we have the ability to reach out. And so it does go beyond just accountability at the election.
Yeah,
it is. And also, when you're elected into one of these offices, I feel like it's your job to go to the legislation and make sure that we belong to, like, CCAT, CCI, CC4CA. They're different legislative groups. Dr. Cog, NOCO's starting to kind of get into the legislative group. And that's where, you know, say, like, Dylan Roberts has a bill that he has introduced, and we vote. I mean, these are all very organized groups, and they are listened to. They're listened to by the governor. So if there's something that's opposed, or maybe we'll put some amendments in there, we'll support this. If you make some changes, that is a job that I did not realize how much the commissioners are involved. Mm-hmm. So it's not just here in our community. We have to represent our community down at the Capitol, at the state Capitol. And I know some people think, well, why are they wasting their time there? Because we get unfunded mandates here, and we're in the middle of one right now, which is to make our websites ADA compliance, which is a great idea, but it is really expensive. And so that law that went into effect, we didn't get a dollar, you know, for our small community to pay for something like that. Or, you know, when the laws are changed, they can be significantly damaging to small communities like this. So we got to go down there and voice our opinions.
Yeah, for sure. Well, thank you to our friend Lynette Kelsey, who, for the sake of making sure we get our numbers straight, thank you, Lynette. She saw that we have 1,900 registered voters in Clear Creek County, and that we currently have 9,000 residents. So that sounds a little bit more like the accurate numbers. So anyway, so we have spent some time talking about the importance of elections, both locally all the way to the federal level. We've talked about, you know, how elections are governed for the sake of transparency by state law and party rules. And we've talked about how the first way we gather in an election year is in caucus, and then caucus elects delegates to their county assembly, and the county assembly then nominates delegates who move on to the state assembly. And in our case, we are part of several districts that have many counties. Our Senate district has many counties. Our House district has many counties. Our Regent district has many counties. And so we, in our congressional district, has several counties. So we move delegates on to those multi-county assemblies as well. That is the business we do right here at the grassroots. So I think we'll take a little bit of a break, and we'll come on it back in a few minutes, and we'll talk a little bit more about community service.
Come around, sit down, take a step, fall asleep, baby, you don't have to speak.
Okay, here we are coming back with What's Upstream on March 4th, 2026. We have been talking about the beginning of our elections here in Colorado. And the Do Talk Dinners is the PSA I have right in front of me. And since Chris Gould is very involved in that, Chris, I wish you would invite those gentlemen out there to consider coming to the next Do Talk Dinner on Monday night.
That's right. This coming Monday, 6 to 8 at the Club Hotel, we will have a gathering of all the men from the county that are interested in a free meal and some structured conversation about a variety of topics. We have, trying to think if it's Smoking Yards this month or Bojo's or Tommyknockers. They've all been great supports along with the Club Hotel, and, just a chance for guys to get to know each other, make connections, you know, talk a little bit about, all the fun things that, go into being a dude these days.
Jody.
Yeah, I would like to say that my husband finally had time to attend last month, and I wasn't sure how he was going to take it. And he's involved in other things on his own, too, on different boards, but he loved it. And he's actually recruited one of my sons, so you'll get one new person next Monday.
That's great. And, I mean, it's been 24 to 31 men for the 5 months that we've been doing it. And the ages have gone from 22 to 84. And, you know, some of the time is just talking about the football game or whatever comes up. And then the other part is talking about, digging in about something that's real and having some conversations. So glad to hear that, that your husband came.
And yeah, and I think one of the things that we discussed is we don't drink alcohol. And so a lot of groups that get together, it seems to be a lot around alcohol. And this is an alcohol-free type of activity. So that attracted my husband.
Yeah, I'll even broaden it to say substance-free. It is exactly that. It's just dudes getting together and having some conversations.
And will it be extended beyond March?
Oh, yeah. In fact, I have flyers in my car that I need to start posting. This will go the second Monday of every month, 6 to 8, Club Hotel. And right now we've got people who are either donating money and then we'll purchase food, or, you know, the restaurants that are contributing. But we will find ways to make this work even beyond that. So we're looking at some possibilities for how to grow this. It's kept us busy.
Well, and it sure doesn't hurt to be featured on Colorado Public Radio.
Yeah, we even got a longer interview with another Colorado Public Radio show, Colorado Matters. It hasn't aired yet, but when it airs, I'm sure we will get more interest from across Colorado, but we've already been getting interest from other states, even getting from medical schools, that sort of thing. It's been very interesting to see how this progresses, but we're also supposed to have the radio segment go out on National Public Radio. So we're trying to gear up for when that happens, because it's been busy. You know, February was incredibly busy because of the CPR segment. So if it goes to NPR, well, it's supposed to. When it does go out, boy, we're going to be busy.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. It's a good problem to have.
I guess so. And again, you know, thanks to Jamie Fancelo,
yeah,
who really, I think those dinners got started in Gunnison.
Yeah.
And then she wanted to promote them in her region, and got one going in Gilpin. And then we got the one going here in Clear Creek. And she was a real champion.
Yeah, she's it's called a regional health connector, mm-hmm. and it's a state program that she has the three counties. And Gilpin had already started something, but she then was able to provide some support. But she did get us started here in Clear Creek and in Park County as well.
In Park.
Yeah. So.
Very cool. Thank you, Jamie, and thank you, Chris, for being a facilitator. Andrew Wolf, I think, is another facilitator.
Wolf, Ben Shea.
Ben Shea. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
Trevor Selkirk helped us get rolling. So
wonderful, wonderful offering. So 19 on, I think, is the age group that you're pulling from.
Right, 18 on, adult.
Adult, yeah. Young adult to elderly adult.
We'll take them all.
That's terrific. All right. And, you know, we're going to talk a little bit about just public service now, because it is such an important part of our communities, of our democracy. And, you know, the Dude Talk Dinner's facilitators are public servants. They are volunteers.
True, but I'll also throw out that I think when we talk about public service, engagement in these types of groups can also be a form of public service, because, you know, in you mentioned Gunnison, Dude Talk Dinner started in Gunnison, but that was in reaction to a number of suicides in that community. Mm-hmm. That's not what Dude Talk Dinner's in Clear Creek is about. Here, it's more about empowerment, and it's not empowerment to the detriment of any other group, you know, women, kids, whatever. It's the idea is that it's making our community stronger, mm-hmm. by strengthening, you know, or helping men to connect and find that strength. Mm-hmm. And so I believe that even being involved in something like that, or in a group like Solve or whatever, it's not just the leadership of the groups. I think it's also engagement in those groups. That can be community service as well.
Yeah, good point. You don't have to be the leader.
No.
You're just participating in supporting our community and each other. And there are a lot of clubs and organizations in this county that do that. And people who find other people, get involved in ways that they're interested in. And you're right, that is public service. I sort of differentiate public service writ large as participation, kind of, I don't know, from your heart and in service to your community. And I think it's differentiated by, you know, work that is perhaps in service to a business or corporation or something like that, where your service is just for a different purpose. And that when we talk about elections, we do end up talking about people who get elected to serve the public. And you know, one of the things that keeps our democracy strong and keeps our democracy from becoming uncorrupt is by people staying true to that mission, staying true to people, as opposed to their own wealth or, you know, their wealthy friends. So let's talk a little bit, though. You both come from a lot of public service in your background before becoming elected servants. Yeah, Jody, your service goes way back.
Yeah, so I would have to bring this back to my family, my upbringing. My parents have always been last people to leave the party, putting up the chairs and the tables, and just being, you know, good servants even to the earth. I grew up recycling, so I don't know anything different. You'll usually see Shane and I be the last people at the parties to clean up, and that's every volunteer thing that we go to. It feels wrong to not, And then when there's opportunities that come up, somebody will ask, hey, would you like to be part of Solve? Sue Howell had stopped by to get some eggs from me years and years ago, and the Greenway deal was kind of happening. And I was like, well, what is this? And so I started showing up, and some other people showed up, and then I kind of fell off. I was still raising kids at the time, and as soon as my last son graduated college and the last one in high school, I decided to pick up on some of that again, and then Solve kind of grew into other groups. COVID happened, and that's where I really started diving into, like, the Democrats, and C4 Connectors was formed, and then I kind of did some stuff on the side, making masks. I was a group of women that made over 2,000 masks for just the locals free. It was a way for us to keep busy. Signed up for the census. It was just one thing after another.
That's how we met.
Yeah, we met
that's
during
we
the census.
Met. We were both census workers, 2020.
Yeah. And I always kind of joke, the things that I sign up for are non-paid things, except for the census was. And then my husband, everything he signs up for just ends up, he gets paid. He was a coach, you know, a high school coach. He didn't know you were going to get paid for that. And then he joined the sanitation district. And neither of these are, by any means, you get paid very much. I don't even know why you get paid at all. But it's just the way that it went. And then this is my first kind of service job that is actually a paying job. But that is
being county commissioner.
Being county commissioner, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I still do a lot of the other stuff. But I'm no means, and I'll tell people it's not about the money. I will sit at these meetings for hours. I will let people call me and talk to me, sometimes up to 4 hours. And listened to constituents because it's important for me. If they just need somebody to talk to, I'm there. Mm-hmm. You know, if there's a vet that's having issues, and then I will take that into action. So what they told me, if I need to make a report, do I need to talk to staff, you know, to see what we can work out? And sometimes they're literally just talking to people. And that's where C4 Connectors, too. That was one of our jobs, is to reach out to some of the elderly residents. And that's what I would do. I'd call some of my neighbors and, you know, check up on them, see how they're doing. And then that led into other things. So, I don't know. I just don't know any different. So
service to your community. How fun, though, that you take it all the way back to, you know, those were values you were raised with. And I will say the same is true for me.
Yeah.
And Chris, all your years in education, boy, talk about public service.
Yeah, and that came from my parents, and my grandmother was a superintendent over in Grand County back in the 60s and 70s. But yes, I, you know, 32 years as an educator, a lot of public service there. And, you know, and then I found out I retired about a year and a half ago to help the elderly in my family to kind of move their way through, you know, their point in life. And I found that I was pretty just rudderless at that point, with nothing or very little to kind of provide that fulfilling work that I had been doing as an educator. Fortunately, I was still involved on the board for the Clear Creek Advocates, and that, you know, provided a lot of that meaning for me. But that's part of why I decided running for county commissioner was a good next step for me. Is, you know, it gets in your blood, and it's hard to step away from that service. I mean, especially when it feels like more and more is put on communities, and there's more that they have to figure out for themselves and fight for themselves and provide for themselves. And so I think, you know, staying engaged, and there are lots of ways that, you know, we've talked about, you know, anywhere from getting involved in some of these groups and doing something with a grassroots organization, all the way to being elected to an office. There are lots of ways that you can be a servant to your community.
Mm-hmm. I just also wanted to say, too, when, you know, sometimes I'll get on Facebook and read things, and people are mad at the mayor of Idaho Springs or the police judge of Georgetown or whatever it is. They do not get paid very well. I mean, like, the police judge, your selectmen, they don't get paid at all.
Right.
They are just all volunteers out there putting their, you know, their time and their name on the line. So I think that's something that I've learned more in this role too. And I've always had respect for people that have, you know, stepped it up. But as a community, I think when you see the negative comments on there, you really think about the place where they're coming from. How can we help those people that are upset? And if they are people that are just stirring up trouble, look at the people that are being attacked as well. You know, it's no fun to worry about your kids going to school or somebody being harassed because you're in a position that may put them in harm's way too. I think people can be just a little bit more compassionate than they are, especially for people that are volunteering their time. And I think that even goes all the way up to your Senate and House. I mean, when we talk about leaving this role and doing other things, a lot of those are pay cuts to what normal jobs are. Mm-hmm. It's not any way to make a living. So,
well, they're not paid a huge amount of money.
And no.
That, so you may be a public servant who still gets paid. You're not getting paid very often what you would get paid if you were working in corporate America.
Exactly.
You just aren't.
Yeah, I guarantee my math degree would go further in the private sector. Mm-hmm. But it's just not what I chose. And I chose to be a public servant as an educator, and was fine with that. But one other thing, though, that I want to hit on, Jody, that you brought up is, you know, when there is negative sentiment towards public servants, one of the things that, especially as a principal, was very clear to me is when people are unhappy with a decision that's made, I get that. You know, as a leader, I am not always going to make the decision that's popular to everybody. But what I would ask everybody to think about when there is a decision that is not the way you would have made it, you need to understand that there are often, and I would say almost always, there are other circumstances, there are other factors than the ones that you are aware of. Our leaders are making decisions that the rest of us don't have all the information on, and in many cases can't have all the information on. Sometimes there are concerns that are just not public. There's information that's not made public, cannot be made public. And so they're making those decisions, which I guess gets back in the case of our elected officials to be sure that you elect somebody that you trust. And if you didn't do your research or if you didn't vote, then I don't know what to tell you. But look, we need to be cautious about really, you know, drawing and quartering our elected officials, our public servants, because the work is important, and we can't scare them away. We can't make it to where they're worried for themselves, their families, whatever.
Well, we are seeing that in this day and age, mm-hmm. where people who are putting themselves out there, judges, other elected officials, are being targeted. And so there is such an important point, Chris, because there's a certain risk now that's even greater with being a public official, because you're public, you're known. People have Jody's number, people call Jody. So again, let's offer grace and appreciation to people who are willing to be, you know, in the public sphere, making decisions that are hard decisions often, but for the public. Yeah, Jody.
I just wanted to say too, when we have, like, say, public hearings or different things at the commissioner's level, I do ask the public to be engaged. And not so much in calling me, because I can't discuss some of those projects, or any of them. But we do have a process, and you bring that information in that process, which is come to the meetings, come to public comments, submit comments. You can email us. You can send them to the county manager. That we do look at those. We read every single one of them. We'll go over things. We'll talk about them in work sessions. This board, and I think if Chris gets on this board as well, very transparent. So your voice matters, and it's important to us to hear it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And again, it's so wonderful to have our people who are making these decisions available, making themselves available to hear what we have to say and to listen to what's important to us. And learning the avenues to do that becomes really important, but you've got to take responsibility to do that. And if you don't take responsibility, it's not really fair to do a lot of complaining because those avenues are available. So,
yep.
Well, this has been a fascinating conversation about our elections, which we're excited about and hopeful for, and also just the whole idea of being a public servant. And we hope that this has gotten some of you to think about your role in our community. And I'm just wondering if, Jody, you have any kind of final thoughts about these subjects for today.
The only thing I'd like to say is I think the community here is really great. We were just talking yesterday about elderly care. We've got a lot of aging community members here, and I know my mom's been part of this as well, trying to keep some of the elderly in their homes. Neighbors step it up, and this is what makes this community great. I am honored to be able to represent people. Like I say, it's the 9,200 people standing behind me always, and people get annoyed by that. I'll be in a tourism meeting, and they'll be talking about something, and I'll say, whoa, whoa, whoa. You know, we've got people that live here. This is going to change their lives, and I will constantly be that reminder. So thank you for giving me that position.
And Chris?
Just, I guess, emphasizing the involvement in the small community. It's you know, I worked for many years down in the metro area as an educator, including as an administrator. And when I talked to my former colleagues down there about what it's like to serve in a small community like this, they're amazed by how hard the work is, but also how much we can get done and how rewarding that is to see those things happen, you know, the changes happen, that the improvements, whatever it is. So
yeah,
and make sure to get out and vote.
Yeah,
get out and vote. And if you're not participating in caucus and assembly, your next time to vote will be in June in the primary ballot, because we will also have a primary ballot. So thank you very much to Jody Hartman-Ball and Chris Gould for being my guests today. This is Lori Beckles signing off of What's Upstream. Please join me next week for another edition.
What's going down? What's coming to our town? It's gonna be good.
Hope it don't flood.
Oh.